are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 17th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, billionaire enemy of public schools to have her confirmation hearing this evening. Meanwhile, Republicans in disarray over healthcare, or are they? And protests around the country. Perhaps, making it that much harder for Republicans to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Meanwhile, 40 Democrats in the Congress and counting are boycotting President-elect Trump's inauguration. And speaking of the president-elect, he's at historic low in polling. Of course, it's completely rigged, but nevertheless, at least someone's taking the time to rig it so low. Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, corrupt bigly, but at least not flaunting his healthcare proposals.
He brings the low key to the administration. Low key corruption.
Monica Crowley out. We will crib a published poem in which to bid her adieu. Just as an homage to her plagiarism scandal. Sessions, maybe on the edge. Pudzer may be stepping out. How many of Trump's unvetted nominations will sink, ladies and gentlemen? And a scalper already feeling the Trump malaise. The strange story of the head of the D.C. National Guard going to be relieved of duty in the middle of the inauguration celebration. And then a heartwarming story of women around the country who voted for Donald Trump in their own words. Awkward, as my kids would say. All that and more on today's program. Take your phone calls. We will take your IMs later in the program. There were protests. I mean, we got a lot of news that took place over the course of the weekend. On Friday, I don't want to spend too much time on this at all, because I don't know what the value of it will necessarily be. But on Friday night, the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is chaired by Richard Burr from North Carolina, basically did a 180 on investigating Russia-Trump links. Now, I know there's some members of our audience who think I'm involved in McCarthyism when I report that the Senate Intelligence Committee is doing this. But the Senate Intelligence Committee is doing this. And I don't know, you know, what else to tell you. I thought it was weird. Because 12 hours earlier, maybe it was late Thursday, let's say 24 hours earlier, Burr said the committee would have no plans to even touch on possible contacts between Trump emissaries and Russia asserting that the issue likely falls under the FBI's purview. We don't have anything to do with political campaigns, the Republican said.
Oh, really?
I mean, of course, that's a joke. But that was Thursday night. By Friday night, Burr said his committee will investigate possible contacts between Donald Trump's campaign and Russia. And that the committee will use subpoena powers if necessary to secure testimony from Obama administration officials as well as Trump's team. Both Burr and Senator Mark Warner said. Something happened on Friday. And that made people change their minds. Now, I don't know what it is. Honestly, I don't know what it is. We do know that Democratic House members came out of committee meetings on Friday morning after, not committee meetings, but after basically, yeah, after meeting with James Comey, and they were pretty incensed. They wouldn't say why. It was later reported that Comey refused to talk about whether or not he was or the FBI was investigating Trump. Now, that's just the reports. I don't know. We don't know what was said in there. So it's just this ongoing weird situation. And remember here, there's two separate issues, right? Russian involvement in hacking or stealing the emails and touching on data files and all this, much of which was reported before the election. In fact, Malcolm Nance, take it for what it's worth, wrote a book about it that came out in October. So this was all when people thought that Hillary Clinton would win the election. So this isn't simply about Democrats' sour grapes. Maybe people have glommed onto it because of it or whatnot. Maybe part of that was before because people want to, maybe there's an agenda to, I don't know, invade Crimea by the United States. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the agenda would be, but let me just state it because I know some people are convinced that this was an attempt to gin up another Cold War or whatever. I have an alternate theory about the Comey narrative, and every time I say it out loud, it starts to make more sense to me. This is just complete speculation on my part. I just want people to chew on this. So we do know from reports that it was an attempt in over the summer, two different attempts by the FBI to secure FISA warrants that failed. We know the FBI was part of a joint task force that was investigating connections between Trump, the Trump campaign in some fashion, and Russian banks. And reports say that they went and sought a FISA warrant in October and secured the warrant, although we haven't heard anything about that. And that had to do with banks and had to do with members of Trump's Russian banks and Trump's campaign emissaries or whatnot. So I've been thinking about why Comey would not say whether or not to these Democratic congresspeople, whether or not he was the FBI was investigating Trump. I mean, surely behind closed doors, he could say we're not investigating Trump, right? I mean, that just seems to me to be rather obvious. And particularly if Comey is, now, look, I'm just spitballing here, folks. I don't want people to freak out. You know, if Comey is as partisan as we've, you know, as the narrative goes at this point, There's no reason why he wouldn't break protocol to say we're not investigating Trump. Who's going to get mad at him about that? But he refused to say anything, according to reports. So then you got to recall back when he would say something about an investigation back in October. Early October-ish. When Comey made that announcement, very few people thought, I mean, people thought this was going to damage her, but very few people thought it was going to make a difference in the election. People thought it was inappropriate. It was incredibly inappropriate. He broke protocol. There's no doubt about it. And the Attorney General's IG is going to investigate this. But you try and think, like, what was he thinking when he was going to do that? At the time, I thought, well, he thinks he's going to go up in front of Republican committees with Hillary Clinton as president, and he's afraid that they're going to cut his funding or something like that. Or he's just a partisan hack and figures he can help push along the investigations going forward during a Clinton administration, right? Because there's no reason, or all of the above, there's no reason for Comey to think that Hillary Clinton's not going to win the election in that first week of October. We also know in October they're still seeking a FISA warrant. Maybe they got it before he announced. Maybe they got it afterwards. Maybe there's a relationship between that announcement and the FISA warrant. I don't know. But what if, and again, I'm just shooting off, I mean, literally, this is just like something that's been floating around, and I figure I'd put it out there to you because I have a podcast. Why wouldn't I?
Unprompted.
Well, no, I just, it came up a couple of times over the weekend. And what if Comey thought, okay, Clinton's going to be elected. We are going to nail Trump or someone in his campaign. It is they're looking very dirty in terms of their relationship with this bank. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just speculation. But let's say that was in his mind. And he's thinking like, okay, I need to look as squeaky clean as possible because Trump has already threatened Hillary Clinton with prosecution if she loses. And so if I bring an indictment against Donald Trump after she wins, it's going to look like it was just revenge, right? I mean, it would. And so what I'm going to do is go beyond where I could to make it look like I'm being even-handed. And I'm going to announce this investigation to Clinton so that there's no doubt whatsoever. Now, I'm not saying this is incredibly stupid logic on his part, but there is a logic to it that makes just as much sense as he thinks this is going to bring Hillary Clinton down. Because if he did, 2 weeks later when he announces she's exonerated, he probably thought she was going to win. I mean, why? You know, it's not like James Comey is better at algorithms than Nate Silver, who still thought there was a 75% chance that she was going to win. So what if he is still on the trail now? And that's why he's not going to tell congressional leaders, because it's an ongoing investigation. Maybe he doesn't find anything at the end of this. I don't know. It's one narrative I haven't seen written up anywhere. And it just, there's some logic to it as I keep repeating it. And the other weird thing about those two FISA requests, understand that those two FISA requests would be the 13th and 14th warrant requests from the FISA court over the course of something like 15 years and 40,000 approved warrants that got rejected. Like, they added nearly 20%. I know, I should know math better. It was probably close to 17 or 15%.
No. Not know math better.
Remember 15% to the number of warrants historically rejected, right, in two attempts. That, to me, I think we've mentioned this, sounds like people who are not writing warrants that they think are going to get accepted.
Right.
Then in October, it changes. I don't know. I just figured I would throw that out there before we dig into what a horrible, horrible nominee for Secretary of Education is going to be having hearings tonight. But let me say this. If you run or manage a small business, then you know that keeping up with human resources paperwork can be extremely overwhelming. Ugh, tell me about it. Daily grind of resolving payroll issues, chasing down data, filing, organizing. You should look at my filing systems. Dealing with messy spreadsheets can really get in the way of you being able to focus on the employees and your business for that matter. But luckily, I've got a solution for you. Bamboo HR. It's the complete online HR management software for small to medium-sized businesses. Everything about Bamboo HR is designed to make life easier for business owners, human resource managers, and even employees. You don't have to worry about remembering to log an employee's time off because Bamboo HR does it for you. Michael, you'd be in trouble on this system. We had this system. Slip through the cracks a lot with him.
Matt, we're going to need to work on Bamboo HR, if you know what I mean.
You guys are going to have to try and figure out a hack to get around this. No more file cabinets, no more spreadsheets, no more messy whiteboards. And now, for a limited time, visit BambooHR.com, click on the microphone, enter the code REPORT to get a 14-day free trial. Try it. You'll wonder how you ever got along without it. HR paperwork solutions made easy. That's BambooHR.com. Enter code REPORT for a free 14-day trial. You guys may be in some trouble around here.
Let us find this BambooReporting.com.
You'll
do work on this.
No more slacking off around here. I want to get to the... around the country, there were protests on the 14th and the 15th of dealing with the Affordable Care Act. Now, you know, I'm hesitant to even talk about like what Trump said, because on one hand, I may need three hands to do this. Donald Trump knows nothing about healthcare.
Yes.
I say that with the way our healthcare system, I say that with 100% confidence. I think he doesn't know anything about it. I think he may hear from people that deductibles are high and that sucks. And yes, that's right. That's true. He doesn't know anything about how one could fashion policy. Beyond that, I think he also just says things because he thinks that it will get him out of that situation he's in at any given moment. You're asking me questions about healthcare? I'm going to answer.
Undoubtedly.
And then on the third hand is, this actually is probably a good thing from our perspective in wanting to maintain as much of our healthcare system as opposed to having a right-wing conservative vision for what healthcare should be, right? I mean,
I also think, before you get to the quote, that the other thing about this is, and I know I've said this before, I think that to the extent that he cares about anything that involves like public optics or his campaign commitments, it's doing something that, at least with people who voted for him or supported him, that would sort of disastrously reverse his support or lower his popularity. So I think he's someone who watches TV all the time. We'll get to those reports later. But when he sees someone on TV
saying,
I'm going to lose whatever,
of course,
and I voted for Trump. And the other thing, too, is
that's what I'm saying. When he says, like, deductibles are high, he's responding to some very broad complaints that exist. Right. Like, I mean, yes, of course. And he
bizarrely seems to have an instinct, like, and I agree with you, you said before the show, he has way more discretion over foreign policy. But it does seem like there's a handful of things that he hits certain themes on, like NATO's a problem, xenophobia,
yes, all right,
and immigration.
But wait, let's not convolute things here. The point is that he's out there making promises about health insurance that the Republican Party cannot keep. There's just no way that they can keep these promises. I mean, I guess they could be totally different people. And yeah, I'm sure he's saying it because it sounds good to him when he says it. And because he's so ignorant about the healthcare proposals that are out there. So on one hand, you have to disregard what Donald Trump is saying. On the other hand, the only reason why you should regard it as, let's say, Bernie Sanders is because by holding him and announcing that he's made these promises, it makes the Republicans' job that much harder to do what they want to do. Remember, a week ago, they were like, we're going to repeal and then replace in a couple of years. And then Trump comes out and says, we may do it within 15 minutes of each other. Repeal, then immediately replace. It could be a week. It could be a day. It could happen immediately. And then the next day, Paul Ryan asked him, yeah, we're going to repeal and replace at the same time. So this is what he had to say. We're going to have insurance for everybody. There is was a philosophy in some circles that if you can't pay for it, you don't get it. That's not going to happen with us. Okay, so universal access to health insurance means we can all buy it, and all we need to do is have the money to buy it. Well, I mean, we don't have the money to buy it.
Everyone has access to a Mercedes.
Exactly. You can all go and buy a Mercedes. Now, it's true. Maybe there's no Mercedes dealer in your town, but you could go to the next town. And maybe it's true that you don't have $60,000 or whatever Mercedes costs, but you could earn it. But he says very specifically, there was a philosophy in some circles that if you can't pay for it, you don't get it. That's not going to happen with us. I mean, that sounds like to me, we're going to give everybody who doesn't have health insurance, health insurance. And people under the law can expect to have great health care. It will be in much simplified form, much less expensive, and much better. Now, I got to say, I don't like Donald Trump, but I'm all on board with this proposal. And it's not going to be their plan, speaking of the Affordable Care Act. It'll be another plan, but they'll be beautifully covered. I don't want single payer. What I do want is to be able to take care of people. Now, look. If he wants to call it Medicare for all and not single payer, I'm totally down with that too. That's great news. But there's no way the Republican Party is going to be able to pass something that does what he just promised. It's not possible for them to do it. I mean, I guess it's physically possible.
It's not going to happen. But if he...
You imagine all the Democrats, though, would be like, I'm not going to vote for...
Anything that this Trump proposes. Payer.
Like, they all... Like, everybody has to pretend online. Like, right. We don't like this.
Right. But if they... If he actually came forward with a proposal that included Medicare buy-in, Medicaid, you know, like... And then you box Republicans, then is the scenario we just keep Obamacare?
I
mean, because it's ironically like that's they basically want to Obamacareize Medicare. I think that's the third way. We go back to the original center right option, which is Obamacare. We have the process that Obama didn't give us through Trump.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think. But the other thing that could happen is this, folks. They could pass Tom Price's plan, although he's not going to flaunt it, and they're not supposedly working with their Health and Human Services nominee. This is the actual quote. They're claiming going into his confirmation hearings that they have not fashioned their proposal with any input from him.
That's very encouraging.
It's incredibly encouraging.
Why don't you remind everybody what his proposal is?
Well, I will in a bit. His proposal is the same as that Ryan has been pushing, basically. High-risk pools, which are bullshit, at least in the amount that they're funding it. I mean, literally, it would take 25 times more their funding than they are offering, at least. Health savings accounts, That's great if you have money and you get to save tax-free money. Tax credits, which would be basically like the Obamacare, subsidies, but less. And then probably tort reform. I don't know what else they've included in there. But so here you have this problem that Donald Trump is creating for Republicans. And meanwhile, there's another problem that Republicans are having. And that is that, and Bernie Sanders has been the driver behind this, and some individual Democratic senators. But it really has been the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, weird to say, he's an independent, that has been pushing these protests across the country. And here are the, here is a report from Colorado where some activists went to Congressman Mike Kaufman's. He's a Republican. He's in a swing district. He was going to have a small event at a library. Well, 150 people showed up, and he basically ran. Listen, watch this.
All they wanted to do,
and there were hundreds of people here,
was go into the community room at the Aurora Public Library to meet with Congressman Mike Kaufman.
Representative didn't have a plan. They expected just a small handful of people to show up.
Instead, they came in droves, mostly people like Berthy Roth.
All of us were supposed to be able to be in there all together
to talk about what's going on with the Affordable Care Act.
I am going to potentially lose my health insurance. I've had a pre-existing condition. I've had breast cancer. What's going to happen to me?
We were under the understanding it was a town hall meeting, and they were only allowing four people in at a time.
Leaving this community with little room. And rising frustrations.
I'm trying to get an answer and I can't even get in.
Kaufman's chief of staff, Ben Stein, released a statement saying the congressman routinely holds one-on-one meetings, not town halls. Quote, constituents are invited to meet individually with the congressman to express their opinions, seek help with a range of issues, and discuss legislation.
100 people could have fit in there easily.
And we were told that they only see 10 or 15 people most of the time and not planning for much larger group of constituents is a poor foresight at best. I do
believe. And while they were all singing and waiting, police were putting up crime scene tape so Kaufman could leave. Six minutes before the event was supposed to end.
We were told at one point everyone would get their time, and then he sneaks out 6 minutes early. I think he couldn't handle it.
Stein's statement reads, quote, unfortunately, we only reserve the room at the Aurora Central Library for 90 minutes, which is usually plenty of time to see everyone. For those who were unable to see the congressman today, we apologize. All they wanted was a voice. Instead, they got a closed door and a statement.
And my spouse, who had health insurance, passed away. What do I do? You know, what am I supposed to do?
That's a local news segment, and this type of stuff is starting to happen across the country. It part of this is part of our revolution's Our First Stand. Some of that was happening on the 15th. That particular one happened on the 14th. Listen to Kaufman's statement. Yesterday was unfortunate because partisan activists showed up only to disrupt the event I was holding at the Aurora Central Library. Unbelievable. I have been doing 5-minute one-on-one constituent meetings for the last 5 years, although I do allow small groups if they share the same issue concerns. This gives an opportunity for everyone to be heard, not just the loudest voices in the room. Well, it seemed to me there were a lot of people there who shared the same concern.
Is he talking about lobbyists?
Yeah, exactly.
So I do 5-minute meetings regularly with soft-spoken constituents.
More of those around the country is going to make it very difficult for people like him.
Well, that was the, what was it that always the right-wing concern about, even something as modest as Obamacare? Like, you know, it's the classic. It's harder to claw away something than give it, right?
Yes,
and so
yes.
Here you go.
And the best part is we only had the room at the library for 90 minutes. Because, you know, that Aurora library meeting room. Dude, if you don't get there early and lock that crap up, you're done. Try and extend it for 10 minutes as a congressman. Forget it. You are SOL, my man. SOL. Right now, Obamacare is at its highest level of popularity. 50% of Americans say they have little to no confidence that Republican proposals to replace the law will make things better. 45% of respondents believing the health care law is a good idea. Now, understand that of those 40, of the 55% who say that it's not, you've got a significant chunk of people who think it doesn't go far enough. So going the other direction is like at a 65 to 35% deficit. So you have to pretend you're not. And you, if you're Donald Trump, you see no cost in pretending you're not. But Republicans are out there trying different messaging that they can use to sort of pretend that they're not. So it's like, oh, everybody gets insurance? Yeah, everybody's going to have access to health insurance.
And that's where, I mean, he really just effed them.
Yes.
And that is why I know, you know, you might think it's convoluting it, but I just think it matters that at each step of the way, like remember in the debate, when ACA repeal came up, he said, everyone's going to get it. We're not going to be a country where someone dies on the street. I mean, there have been a handful
which
of issues.
Which is literally the opposite of what
The Grayson.
Paul said.
Grayson.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, what's the remember? Does everybody remember what Grayson said? The Republican plan is if you get sick, die quickly, right?
So all during that hour first stand on the 15th, you had 1,500 people showed up in a rally in Bowie, Maryland. You had Maryland was a big one, I guess. You had people showing up all around the country. According to Sanders, our job today is to defend the ACA. Our job tomorrow is to bring about Medicare for All, single-payer system. So I don't know what's going to happen, but they are certainly don't want this to come up in the hearing for Tom Price. So much so that they're pretending that he has not been involved in the development of a replace plan out of the White House, which is shocking.
What is the spin on that? Is that basically saying like, he's like, is it like, I'm like a Supreme, I mean, it's a lie too, but is he gonna be like, I'm a Supreme Court justice almost. Like, you tell me what you want and I implement it.
It is exactly.
You want universal health care? You got it.
It is exactly.
Like, is that what they're gonna say?
It is exactly, I will say it right now, what Tom Price thinks he's doing. Best part. Tom Price does not want to flaunt his own proposal to replace the Affordable Care Act. And according to this piece from CNN, in the lead up to his confirmation hearings, Price has been kept out of Trump's transition team efforts to craft an Obamacare replacement plan. According to a senior transitional official, the incoming administration wants Price to be inoculated from questions about what Trump's alternative to the Affordable Care Act looks like when he faces probing senators this week. You know why? Because I can tell you what it looks like. It looks like this. It looks like nothing. And when he gets there, they're just going to say, let's just do your plan, but make sure that there's no deductibles and everybody gets it. And he's going to say, well, no, that's not my plan. My plan is to just spend less on healthcare and let poor people not get it.
Maybe we shouldn't be flaunting that much.
Okay.
Maybe we should be a little more humble.
Don't flaunt that. Well, it's a good thing that Tom Price is not going to be flaunting his own Obamacare replacement plan. And it's a good thing that he's supposedly been sequestered from hearing what the Trump organization plan is.
The Trump organization.
I mean,
that's all right. That's it. Chalk it. That's definitely the future name of the cabinet and administration.
Hey, the Trump organization.
The Trump organization announced today a new foreign policy initiative.
Well, it's a good thing because we're going to want time during the hearings for Tom Price to talk about how this guy thought he could get away with insider trading and violations of the congressionally passed Disclose Act. Here is a CNN report that'll catch you up on this.
Now, ethics experts tell me that this particular case raises insider trading concerns, and that's because Congressman Price purchased stock as much as $15,000 in one major medical device maker, Zimmer Biomet, and that would have been hurt by a federal rule affecting hip and knee implant manufacturers like Zimmer Biomet. And Aaron, less than a week after purchasing that stock, Price offered legislation that would have helped Zimmer Biomet by delaying that federal rule until 2018. Now, the Price official who says that the congressman views his efforts to uphold the public trust very seriously did not respond directly, as you noted, Aaron. But Price has promised to divest from 43 companies that could present a conflict of interest if he's confirmed as the head of Health and Human Services. And interestingly, Aaron, one of those companies is Zimmer Biomet, but he did not do that when he was a member of Congress.
Pause it. So in other words, he's going to divest from the company that he already made a chunk of change from in promoting a rule that would, a law that would help his company.
I don't want to flaunt that, Mr. Chairman.
I'd rather not flaunt that. My stock-picking expertise.
I feel like it just gets really kind of arrogant, frankly, if I say that as an example. I am a genius at selecting medical stock.
Recall that in 2012, the Stock Act was passed, which was supposedly to fight members of Congress trading stock based on intelligence gleaned from the legislative process. Well, 2 weeks ago, I had no idea that this
I didn't glean it. I created it. Rather a big difference.
I think so.
Zimmer Biomet, but he did not do that when he was a member of Congress.
Which, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, Manu. And as you lay out this example, this is not the first time, right, that Price actually did this. Traded stock in companies at the same time that he was actually going ahead with legislation that would directly affect those companies' profits.
Yeah, that's right. The Wall Street Journal reported last month that Price actually traded more than $300,000 worth of stock in health companies over the past 4 years while working on legislation, some of the bills affecting those companies.
To be fair to myself, I didn't realize it applied to day trading. Okay? Because I thought it was long-term profits. See, what I do is go and pump and dump. So I don't want to flaunt anything.
Those are completely different areas of concern, Mr. Chairman.
I feel like if I had, in some fashion, predicted a rise of stocks instead of used the legislative process as a way of creating it, that's something I'd want to flaunt. Because that would be like, wow, you seem to really have.
But you just, conjured this whole windfall for yourself, sir.
From my perspective, it's just like saying like, oh, I'm not predicting that this bookshelf will fall over. I'm just pushing it over.
Yeah, I was giving it a nice push.
I'm doing what anybody could do.
I'm not saying that these breast implant manufacturers are going to get a killing when we eliminate liabilities on the silicon exploding in women's chests. I'm just going to do it. I mean, it's pretty direct.
And if my little E-Trade account had an automatic sell, when the stock hit a certain point, what am I going to do? I'm not good with computers. Man, I can't go in and turn it off.
Thank them algorithm, gentlemen. Probably the Russians. Am I right? Too soon?
Oh, jeez. Well,
am I the only one who rooted for the John Voight character in The Rainmaker?
You know, I mean, to be fair, folks, it's not really hypocritical for these guys, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's all about just, you know, they're working so hard to make money for these medical device practitioners. They're working so hard to make sure that there are no cost constraints on medicine and the delivery of medicine. It feels like it would be exploitive for them not to get a taste.
It'll
right?
I mean, against the rigors of the market system. You know, I remember, Tom DeLay was still in the house, and I was like, you know, at that point where you don't really understand how can people do what they do, basically. And I read a profile of Tom DeLay, and I remember one of the things, I don't remember anything else about the profile other than the fact that he said there should be more money in politics. People spend more promoting potato chips. And I just remember, like, that was his, he was just like, it's offensive. Like, politics is a serious business. How do we not have more money sloshing around?
He got his wish. Now, one of the aspects, again, of the Tom Price plan is also part of the Paul Ryan plan, and that is the reinstituting of what are known as high-risk pools in each state across the country. In fact, these high-risk pools, basically, the idea is we're going to corral all the sick people, all the people who have pre-existing conditions. Paul Ryan told us last week he thinks it's 8% of the population under the age of 65. That could be up to 20 million people. I've seen other projections closer to 4 or 5 million people. And he talks about how fantastic these high-risk pools were. And as of 2008 or 9, leading into Obamacare, there were 34 across the country, various state risk pools. They all had different rules and whatnot, and they served 200,000 people. If you're going to put all the high-risk people in these pools, all the pre-existing conditions in these pools, it's going to be 4 to 8 million people. But up until those 34 states, it was 200,000 people. The reason why there was only 200,000 people was because premiums were far more expensive in those high-risk pools. Here's Paul Ryan singing the praises of the one that he had in Wisconsin.
We believe that state high-risk pools are a smarter way of guaranteeing coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. We had a really good one in Wisconsin.
Yeah. We had a really good one in Wisconsin. This is an email I got from Eric, listener Eric. According to Paul Ryan, we believe that state high-risk pools are a smart way of guaranteeing coverage for people with pre-existing. We had a really good one in Wisconsin. Eric writes, I have multiple sclerosis. There are medications that delay the progression of MS, and I have taken one, glatiramer acetate, since 1999. Its price in the 90s was about $10,000 a year. Since that time, the price has increased many-fold. The brand name of this drug, Copaxone, now costs $78,000 a year. A generic version of this drug was released by drug manufacturer Novartis in 2015. It costs $75,000 a year, a whopping savings of 4%. In 2011, I called Wisconsin's high-risk pool and asked about their coverage of MS. The answer? They covered none of the prescription medication used to delay the progression of MS. The advice of the guy I talked with at Wisconsin's high-risk pool? Go to Canada, buy the drug there, and bring it back to Wisconsin. Paul Ryan is so full of shit. And it doesn't just end there. Not only were these high-risk pools not sufficient, it cost about $2.5 million a year to subsidize these risk pools. Half were borne by premiums. Half of that was borne by other, some states did it with their tobacco funds, supplements. But $2.5 billion a year to deal with 200,000 people. Paul Ryan's plan calls for $2.5 billion a year to deal with 4 to 20 million people. So, there you have it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk a little bit about Betsy DeVos. We'll be talking about her tomorrow. She's going up there today. There's two stories about Betsy DeVos. One is she shares with about nine other people who are headed to the hearings over the next couple of weeks. That is, she doesn't have her ethics forms filed. filed. Why is this important? Because there is people who believe that she has, or there's people who are aware that she has ownership in some private lending outfits that want to get into the private college lending business, or college lending business. There's some people who suspect that she might own interests in private charter companies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would be sort of shocking if she didn't.
It would be kind of shocking if you didn't want to just turn all of America's youth into Amway distributors.
Just remember that she is on record of saying that she doesn't have a problem with public education. She has a problem with public schools. She's going to push vouchers. She has pushed to create charters out of Detroit's public school system. 38% of those charters are underperforming horribly, at least 40%. And none of them seem to have any public oversight of all these public dollars that are going into this dark, deep hole. But what it does do is it allows people of some means to subsidize sending their kids to religious school, which she is a huge proponent of. That's the long and short of it. She has never sent her kids to a public school. She has never taught in a public school. She's never sat on a Public School Committee Board. I don't know if she's ever been in a public school. But she will be, she's the nominee for the Department of Education. All right, going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the show. Remember, it is your membership that makes this show possible. You can become a member by joining the Majority Report by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. I'm not sure what we're going to do the rest of this week, and we're still sort of debating about what we're going to do about the inauguration. As far as I know, he takes the oath at exactly 12 o'clock. So we may start the show earlier. I think we're going to do some mocking. Well, I know we're going to do some mocking. I'm not sure the level.
Very safely predict that one.
I'm not sure the level of the mocking. But at the very least, you know, and some people are saying, don't even watch. But I've heard from people who want to watch, but don't want to watch it alone. And then we'll also maybe try and hear from, if we can get them, people at, and if you're going to be at a, if you're going to be at a rally, send us an email and we'll schedule a time where you can call in.
Or or tweet us images and stuff too.
And yes. We'll put them up. But you want to call in, just give us like a 2-minute report. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject heading line, the city, and put, you know, protest in the city you're going to be in. You're going to be in D.C., you're going to be in New York, you're going to be in Chicago, you're going to be in Boise, you're going to be, I don't know, where. Those are the only four cities I know in the country. I don't know the names of any other ones.
Who's John Lewis?
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. Unbelievable. So I think that's what we're going to do. And this week, I imagine maybe we'll have a guest. Maybe we won't. I'm not sure, 100% sure on this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. We got some more sound to play. We'll be right back. Oh, you know, I also should say, I don't know if anybody's on YouTube would be this registered with anybody, but we keep getting people who tweet at us like, you're not covering this. You're not covering this. Proves you're a sellout. Mm. And they're YouTube viewers. We don't clip the whole show for YouTube. If you want to know, you want to be, we're a radio show that clips stuff for YouTube, but we don't clip all of it.
You completely gave Cory Booker a pass, and he's a neoliberal shill, and I just see the Majority Report with the mainstream Democratic agenda, and apologies for every type of corporate shill imaginable. Meanwhile, you want a new war with Russia.
The mainstream Democratic Party voted to import Canadian drugs.
Okay, so keep apologizing for them. Meanwhile, sane progressive said.
Is that guy still doing this thing?
I honestly have no clue.
All right. 646-257-3920. Hey, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Leave us a review on iTunes. See you tomorrow.